This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of Worldwide Wave, the international LGBT news and current affairs show, every week on Australia's first LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community, this is the Worldwide Wave.
This is Worldwide Wave, Joy's international news and current affairs show for and by the LGBTI community. Taking you around the globe, one queer story at a time. I'm Matt, and just as our guests are spread out across the globe, our Worldwide Wave team is spread out across Melbourne in COVID safety. I'm tonight joined by Paul.
Good evening.
And Shannon.
Hey, everyone. School is meant to be a place of discovery, a place to learn about the world and your place in it. For many LGBT people, it's a challenging time of life where being a bit different can make you a target for others. In South Korea, discrimination against LGBT people can come from both students and teachers. 8 times, the Korean parliament has attempted to pass an act that would outlaw discrimination on multiple grounds, including sexual orientation. But each time, it's come up against some powerful opposition.
A report by Human Rights Watch has placed this push for South Korea's anti-discrimination laws into the spotlight. It tells of bullying, outing of children to parents, and a void of support from teachers. We spoke to Ryan Thorason, a researcher in the LGBTI rights program at Human Rights Watch, about the report titled, "I Thought of Myself as Defective, Neglecting the Rights of LGBT Youth in South Korean Schools." And here's a taste of what was coming up tonight.
Students just didn't know anything about being LGBT growing up. What they knew was kind of filtered through the internet or negative things that they heard from friends. And so many of them really struggled with their sexual orientation or gender identity from a young age, thinking that something in them was broken. And often that message was reinforced not only by their peers, but by teachers or counselors in schools.
Receive LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like Worldwide Wave on Facebook now.
Even in the most liberal schools in South Korea, LGBT issues are rarely discussed. The term gay is used as a slur. Students still figuring out their sexuality experience intense isolation, with little support and sometimes even outright bullying from teachers. It is why many in South Korea are seeking the introduction of a broad anti-discrimination law. Global advocacy organisation Human Rights Watch have compiled a report on the discrimination in South Korean schools. It is titled, "I Thought of Myself as Defective, Neglecting the Rights of LGBT Youth in South Korean Schools." Ryan Thorason leads their LGBT research program. We asked Ryan why Human Rights Watch saw a particular need for this report in South Korea.
Yeah, so we know that bullying against LGBT kids happens in virtually every country. But in South Korea, one of the things that we had heard is that there are very few support systems for kids in schools. Because there aren't anti-discrimination laws that address sexual orientation and gender identity in school, you know, many students don't know what the reception will be if they come out. And South Korea has come under a lot of fire for a sexuality education curriculum that does not talk about LGBT issues, and reports that students who have reached out to counselors in schools have been told that homosexuality is unnatural or wrong. So we knew that there was some concern that students weren't being supported in South Korea and wanted to investigate where the gaps were and where South Korea could do a better job of protecting LGBT youth.
So the report you've done, it's titled, "I Thought of Myself as Defective," as a quote from a student. Tell us some of the stories that you heard from LGBT students in South Korea.
Yeah. So one of the common refrains that we heard and where the title of the report comes from is this refrain that students just didn't know anything about being LGBT growing up. You know, what they knew was kind of filtered through the internet or negative things that they heard from friends. And so many of them really struggled with their sexual orientation or gender identity from a young age, thinking that something in them was broken. And often that message was reinforced not only by their peers, but by teachers or counselors in schools. And we heard about ways that that manifested in the school environment. So, you know, one student described being outed at school. Once he was outed, he was ostracized by his friends. He was assaulted in a school toilet. Another young woman, whose story I think really captures a lot of the issues in the report, Lee Boreum, described a similar circumstance where she was outed and then was excluded from her peer group, but was also verbally harassed in schools and saw teachers failing to respond when she was being targeted for being LGBT, and just kind of internalized the message that adults in the school were not going to help her. And that was a very common refrain that students who often feared disapproval from their parents just had nowhere to turn for support when they experienced discrimination, even when that would turn into things like other students destroying their property or being physically or sexually violent toward them in school. So those were some of the stories that really stuck out.
For trans people, I would imagine in particular, they would have some particularly challenging times just working through, you know, who they are in that environment.
Yeah, and that was one of the things that we look at a bit in the report are just the intensely gendered nature of many school environments in South Korea. So a lot of schools are still segregated by gender, where you have, you know, students going to male schools or female schools. Even within co-ed schools, there are often like homerooms that are separated by gender. So in that intensely gendered environment, it can be really difficult for transgender youth, even on top of challenges that you see in many other countries with access to bathrooms and locker rooms or other school facilities, gendered sports teams, things like that. A lot of schools also still have school uniforms, which can also be a real source of anxiety for transgender students. And I think those are some of the recommendations that you know, we hope that schools in particular will take up, regardless of whether or not the government acts, that things like uniforms that are a little more gender neutral or allow for a wider range of gender expression can just be hugely helpful in making kids feel more comfortable in school so that they don't skip class or drop out of school at a younger age.
You mentioned a lack of support from adults, and I'm assuming teachers are, you know, a key part of that. Did you hear reports of, I guess, discriminatory behavior from the teachers as well?
We did, yeah. We heard a mix where, you know, some teachers tried to be supportive and often faced a lot of backlash from parents when they, you know, tried to signal that they were supportive of LGBT students in schools. Teachers who displayed like a pride flag or something were seen as being overly political and faced a lot of backlash. So then we also talked to students who had teachers who were just totally silent on the issue, would hear bullying in class and wouldn't say anything, or many teachers who would kind of tee up LGBT issues as a subject for debate in school. So to say, like, you know, LGBT people are marching for their rights. Do you agree or disagree? And students talked about how intensely uncomfortable that was to have other students debating whether or not they had rights as part of a classroom exercise. And then we heard instances where teachers were just overtly hostile, where they said that homosexuality was wrong and unnatural, where they were in biology class talking about how you know, men and women are made to be together and reproduce, and homosexuality is kind of an aberration, or being trans is an aberration from that. And students also spoke to that power dynamic. What does it mean to stand up to a teacher in a school environment where they have a lot of control over what university you'll be able to go to, where you're kind of counting on them to give you a good grade and support you as you go into higher education, and how difficult it was to kind of sit and stay silent in that environment and not be able to engage when teachers were just overtly homophobic or transphobic.
And I'm guessing there's probably some parents too that are, if they're sort of worried about their child, are they perhaps, you know, wanting the teachers to deal with it rather than themselves?
Yeah, I think there's an element of that. And I will say that one of the really rich meetings that we had when we were interviewing people in South Korea was a meeting with a local PFLAG chapter of parents who didn't necessarily know that their kids were LGBT when they were in school. And then later, you know, learned of it, kind of came around and became strong allies. And I think there are resources out there for parents who might be struggling with this. But I think oftentimes parents don't know that there are other parents who have been in their shoes who, you know, can provide support, and that parents, like a lot of their children, just feel alone when they might suspect that their kids are LGBT. So students spoke of a real kind of culture of silence or reluctance to come out to their parents and families. And so a lot of things like sexuality education end up being entrusted to schools. But when LGBT kids aren't getting that sexuality education in schools, it just leaves them with even fewer places to turn than maybe heterosexual kids who aren't getting great sexuality education in schools.
Ryan Thorison, researcher in the LGBT rights program at Human Rights Watch, discussing LGBT school students in South Korea on Joy 94.9.
I think we all have our memories of school, and you know, it is always a hard time, but at least within many schools in Australia, there's support systems, and we don't seem to have, or there doesn't seem to be as much of that in South Korea. Certainly, it raises an issue if you're having problems as a young person, you go to the school counsellor and they basically say outright homosexuality is wrong.
Yeah, I mean, it sounded like if you were having issues at school, there was nowhere to go. There wasn't really like a structure to raise those concerns, and even outside of the school to really raise that if you were overall like unhappy, which is horrendous to think about.
And as Brian mentioned in the report, there is examples of people being bullied in front of teachers and the teacher not doing anything. I mean, how would that make you feel? You're being bullied in front of someone that you respect, assuming that you respect the teachers, and they just do nothing, just let it carry on. That must be devastating.
And even the flip side of that, whereby if a teacher does show some sort of solidarity, there are parents that then make an issue of it and complain to the school that they're being too political. So it's kind of damned if you do and damned if you don't.
It must be difficult for the teachers that actually want to do support LGBTI plus students. It must be very difficult for them, because there's I think Ryan mentioned there's actually no support for them in the system either.
Yeah, well, it's seen as being too political. I mean, look, statistically, some of these teachers also have to be gay, right? And so it's got to be hard to, in your job, not be able to support students who are being bullied for this same reason. Or you'll be told that to stand up for them, or to even just say, like, you know, you can't bully these kids, is too political.
And teachers are in that unique position of power. They really have that ability to very positively or very negatively affect their students and in a lasting way. It's an effect on their life, not just at school.
Mm. And the fact that you can have a negative effect by actually not doing anything. Like, I think Ryan just mentioned that some of the teachers actually encourage the bullying or take part in the bullying or are the bullies themselves. But just the fact that they're just standing by and watching this happen is going to have an effect.
And I think the world over for trans students, it's just a very difficult, schools just aren't really set up for trans students as a whole.
Especially if you're a country that apparently has such, still a huge number of segregated schools. I mean, look, some students decide to change schools and they transition and they decide to kind of create that new identity in a new place, you know, anywhere. But to be forced to say, well, you would have to move schools, you would have to change everything about your life in order to even think about that as a possibility is, you know, another awful thing.
Coming up, we ask, what is preventing teachers from being more supportive of their LGBT students? This is Worldwide Wave.
I'm Stefan from Taiwan. You're listening to Worldwide Wave.
Even though we are currently broadcasting outside of the studios, you can still message us on Facebook. So that's World Wide Wave, or very easily to find on W3Joy.
According to a survey by the National Human Rights Commission of Korea, 7 out of 10 South Koreans believe it is wrong to discriminate against sexual minorities, and 9 out of 10 support the enactment of a comprehensive anti-discrimination law. After 8 attempts and years of lobbying, there are now 4 separate drafts of an anti-discrimination act before a parliamentary legislative committee that would outlaw discrimination on the grounds of race, religion, marital status, gender identity, and sexual orientation. Unfortunately, the prospect of legal changes does not mean that LGBT, queer, or questioning students in schools are any more likely to receive support. International advocacy group Human Rights Watch commissioned a report into discrimination against LGBT students in South Korea. Brian Thorison leads their LGBT research program. We asked Ryan what was preventing teachers from being more supportive of LGBT students.
So with the teachers, is it that they're not trained to be able to respond, or they're not equipped to be able to support students, or is it you actually mentioned some homophobia there, so absolutely outright homophobia?
Yeah, I think it's a mix of both. I think some, you know, genuinely want to support students and just don't know how to do that effectively, because there is no kind of required teacher training on LGBT issues. Many are just very unfamiliar with the issues, or repeat fairly regressive views about LGBT people. And then in other instances, it's, you know, overt homophobia or transphobia that just goes unpunished by the school. There's no kind of reprimand for teachers who might be alienating kids in their class and making it harder for them to kind of be present and learn.
Call me old-fashioned, but I would have thought protecting kids from danger in a school environment, giving them a safe environment, seems to be like something that, you know, most reasonable people in the world could get behind. What is stopping that in South Korea?
So I think it's a couple of things. One of them is an attitude that I think still is prevalent in a lot of the world, that, you know, talking about these issues at a young age might somehow make kids LGBT, or that there are kids who, you know, maybe think they might be LGBT but really aren't. There's this misconception that a kind of frank and open discussion about LGBT issues will somehow change kids' sexual orientation and gender identity. And we know that that's not true, but that's still a really prevalent cultural attitude in a lot of places. And one of the things we try to impress in the report is that, you know, things like comprehensive sexuality education, that are where topics are introduced in an age-appropriate way, it's a way of, you know, normalizing LGBT identities in people so that students have the information that they need to kind of think about their sexual orientation and gender identity in a, you know, supported way as they grow older. And then I think the other real barrier, as we think about kind of cultural attitudes, is just the strength of a kind of conservative Protestant movement in South Korea. Recent opinion polls show that there's strong support for anti-discrimination laws that would include LGBT people in South Korea, but there is a very vocal and very politically active minority of conservative Protestants in the country who, yeah, are very aggressive toward lawmakers that, you know, signal any kind of support for LGBT issues. And so that is, you know, there's been kind of lukewarm support from a lot of politicians to say, of course, we oppose discrimination, of course, this is terrible, but haven't really committed any political capital to moving the anti-discrimination bills that are pending in the National Assembly now.
Yeah, we had a very similar thing here where the Safe Schools program was actually sort of held up as something to fight against. It was a rallying call for, you know, very niche opposition groups.
Yeah, well, and I remember at one of the interviews at the National Human Rights Commission of Korea, there was a protest outside where people were protesting against LGBT issues in education. And I asked, like, oh, like, did something just happen? And they said, no, you know, we kind of voiced support for LGBT students months ago, and this group has been protesting kind of every week since then. It's just an intense kind of commitment to putting political pressure on lawmakers. And as much as LGBT groups in the country are voicing support in their own way and kind of you know, are doing the research and publishing the reports and illustrating how this is a problem. It's just a very, very mobilized minority that's fighting against it.
Is the local LGBT community as mobilized? Are they as passionate to make change in this area?
I think it's hard. I mean, I think in South Korea, like a lot of other parts of the world, you know, churches are just a very effective space for political organizing. You have kind of a congregation that shows up weekly, if not daily, that you can kind of mobilize and rally toward a cause. I think LGBT groups in South Korea have been very, very effective in organizing and in providing some support to young LGBT people through kind of private counseling services and hotlines and things that that the community has organized, but, you know, maybe don't have that same kind of mobilization power as some of the institutional churches in Korea do.
I was looking at South Korea. Roughly about half of the population identifies as having no religion. So would that not help, or is it just that this particularly vocal minority is really changing the dial on political debate?
Yeah, I think the vocal minority is certainly kind of, you know, affecting public opinion around these issues. And then I think there's also, you know, secular misconceptions about LGBT people and concerns that, you know, if you have a child who is LGBT, they, you know, will never kind of settle down with a partner. They won't have kids. Like these concerns that parents might have if they're thinking about a kind of future for their child. And so whether it's kind of grounded in religion or not, I think there's an enormous amount of public education that the movement is engaged in. And I think the success of recent prides in South Korea is a really good example where you now see just a much more visible presence and kind of celebration of queer identity and life, not only in Seoul, but also in some of the other kind of mid-sized cities that have seen their first prides in the last 5 years.
From Human Rights Watch, that's Ryan Thorason with us on Joy 94.9. I don't know, were you thinking what I was thinking about the Safe Schools program here in Victoria and the supposed outrage that developed at the time?
Every time I think about Safe Schools and the one we did about Scotland getting integration into Scotland, it just shows, I'm afraid, how backward certain people are in Australia.
And we've actually got an update later in the show on Scotland and their successful campaign over there. It is saying, though, I mean, the idea behind Safe Schools was teachers wanted a resource to help them. That sounds to me like that would be a really good thing for South Korea to employ, some resources that they can feel more comfortable in dealing with these issues of their students.
But then Safe Schools got politicized as well.
Yeah, I mean, there have been so many bills drafted in South Korea trying to even just get it passed.
And this is one of those topics that some of those really conservative groups use as the rallying cry, used to motivate their members to protest and get really politically active. And that's clearly what's happening with these conservative Protestant groups in South Korea.
I was just thinking, it's terrible that, as Shannon said, that they've tried 8 times. And obviously this legislation isn't just about LGBTI. It includes LGBTI discrimination. But it's just, to me, it's just a basic human right that there should not be discrimination. Why are they being blackmailed or pressurized just because the conservative groups can get enough people to shout loud enough about the LGBTI part of that legislation?
And it kind of still goes against, you know, 46% of their population say they have no religion. So it seems these very politically active religious groups, their influence far exceeds their size.
You said earlier, 9 out of 10 South Koreans support enacting a comprehensive anti-discrimination law. So is it just the 1% of that 10 that's stopping it?
We'll find out very, very soon. Coming up on Joy 94.9, we find out how the government and educational leaders have responded to this report. This is Worldwide Wave.
Hello, Australia. This is Noam Apple and Tov from Apple Models in Thailand. The world first transgender model division on Joy 94.9.
On the show that takes you around the globe, one queer story at a time. Worldwide Wave. And a special hello to everybody listening to us on podcast. You can subscribe to receiving our podcast automatically either at joy.org.au/worldwide wave or on iTunes or really any of your favorite podcast platforms. And don't forget to leave us a review.
Joy 94.9.
After completing your years of schooling, the last thing you want to come away with is a feeling that you are defective. But that is the experience of some LGBT students in South Korea, as outlined in a report from Human Rights Watch called I Thought of Myself as Defective, Neglecting the Rights of LGBT Youth in South Korean Schools. Despite the many negative experiences reported by students, there are, however, some individual local authorities that have introduced anti-discrimination laws, but it is not national. And it does not necessarily mean change. Ryan Farrison is the research lead for LGBTI programs at Human Rights Watch. We asked Ryan what they are calling for as a response to this report.
I think the report really illustrates steps that can be taken at every level of government. So obviously at the national level, one of the most effective interventions would be a comprehensive anti-discrimination law. And you know, the report focuses on education, but it also has to be about employment and housing and healthcare. If, you know, parents worry that their kids will never be able to get a job because they're gay, that is going to affect the way that families accept or reject their children. You know, you have to have those comprehensive protections across the board. At the more local level, I think that there's a lot that local governments can do with like student anti-discrimination ordinances, anti-bullying programs, providing counselor training for some of the counselors who work at these adolescent health centers or staff these kind of teen hotlines that people can call if they're struggling with mental health issues. And then at the school level, there's very basic things like letting teachers know that it's okay to voice support for LGBT students in class and that that's not out of line and that the school will have their back if parents complain, or relaxing the dress code so that students have some flexibility in not having to wear uniforms that are so tightly gendered, especially I think for young women where, you know, a skirt or something, sometimes young women will be able to wear pants in schools. Often young men and young trans women don't have that same flexibility around uniform guidelines. So there's things I think that, you know, entities at every level of the Korean government can hopefully take from the report, and a lot of opportunities for positive change.
For those broad-based anti-discrimination laws, is there a coalition of groups? Are there groups around gender, ethnicity, disability that are sort of coming together to really push this as one movement?
There are, yeah. And we have also seen some real momentum behind anti-discrimination legislation in the kind of current legislative session. It's, you know, a comprehensive non-discrimination bill has been introduced like 10 times in South Korea without passing. And now the ruling party has introduced two bills, and there's some minor party bills that have also been introduced pushing for comprehensive non-discrimination protections. And the hope is that, you know, with all of these proposals on the table, the National Assembly will finally kind of treat this as a priority and take action. Because there are presidential elections next year, it's kind of uncertain how the political calculus will play out. But certainly it seems like public opinion is changing and that there is more and more pressure on lawmakers not to kick this down the road even further and to finally kind of commit to some sort of meaningful action.
And have you had any response to the report from either the government or from, I guess, the educational establishment?
We have a bit from the Ministry of Education, you know, let us know that they had received our letter kind of notifying them of the findings in advance, and encouraged us to speak to some of the more, kind of speak to like local schools about the recommendations, which we'll certainly do and be in touch with them. But it is also important that the Ministry of Education and other entities, you know, include LGBT students in the national sexuality education curriculum. And it really can't just be a local response. There has to be some leadership from the top. we also received some feedback from the Ministry of Gender Equality and Family, who run these, what's called the 1388 Youth Helpline, where young people can call in and receive mental health support. You know, they said they obviously kind of are concerned when students are told homophobic things by counselors on the hotline, and that, of course, they don't condone that. I think it's important that, you know, if that's occurring, there needs to be stronger training and more preparation and kind of a proactive response to that instead of only disapproving of the instance where it occurs.
So lots of opportunities for change. The report is, I thought of myself as defective, neglecting the rights of LGBT youth in South Korean schools. Our guest is Ryan Thorason, researcher in the LGBT rights program for Human Rights Watch. Ryan, thanks again for joining us on World Wide Wave.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
That response from the Ministry of Education didn't actually fill me with a whole lot of confidence, sort of, we've received your letter, why don't you go and speak to some other people about it type thing. Do you think it's just a cop-out? Do you think they're just deflecting?
Sounds like a standard letter from a government to me. Thank you for your interest. We're looking into it.
Between that letter, the 8 bills, 4 different versions, I mean, it's starting to sound kind of more and more like what's happening in the UK with the conversion therapy. It kind of feels like they're kicking it down the road, right? Like, we're not going to say no. We're not going to outright say this isn't going to happen, but we're not going to quite get it to the end either.
Maybe, though, this latest push backed by the public polling, which shows, you know, overwhelming support, might just move it through. But, of course, the law change is only one part of it. Bringing in the law change is not necessarily going to guarantee that the LGBT students in schools will actually experience a change.
I mean, we've seen that so often. You've got to have the law, but you've got to also have the cultural change as well. Otherwise, you might as well not have the law, basically.
But I'm hoping that this then allows schools to kind of build in those structural changes where, you know, students would have people to go to, or there'd be more of a structure for schools to follow on what happens if a student is being bullied, or what if teachers notice something. You know, it might be those sort of things being built into the school that then allows students for the first kind of time to say, again, like, to try it out, to say, you know, I'm unhappy, and then you see it work, and then, you know, more students then are able to say it. So I guess, you know, it's just important that they start to build in these structures at school.
And dare I say, it sounds like what they need is a bit of education. Education of teachers on how to respond, education of the school counsellors on how to be inclusive and what not to say to students. So maybe they need to do some learning themselves.
What we've seen so many times is where you personalise the story, that when it's a faceless person, it's easy to attack them. But if you put a face and a name to that person, it does mean that someone's got to stand up and declare themselves and get into the media. But it does change. It is one of the first steps in changing cultural norms, I think.
Absolutely, especially if it's somebody you know, it's very hard to go against it.
Justice See Kee Oon of the High Court of Singapore says, Section 377A serves the purpose of safeguarding public morality by showing societal moral disapproval of male homosexual acts. My name is Yang Far. I'm from Ugitaga in Singapore. And I'm proud to be morally disapproved of.
A huge thank you to Ryan Thorason, researcher in the LGBT rights program at Human Rights Watch. The report, I thought of myself as defective, neglecting the rights of LGBT youth in South Korean schools. And you can find it on our Facebook page or at www.humanrightswatch.org.
And thank you so much to all those who have contacted us on Facebook. Richard, Yangfa, Stefan, Liz, and a heap more who have joined or interacted with us. That's W3Joy on Facebook for you guys who want to join in this week.
We have a fabulous behind-the-scenes team, our podcaster Peter and our social media master Dean. Thank you so much.
And we'll be back next week with more World Wide Wave.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from World Wide Wave, the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time.
World Wide Wave is the international news and current affairs show on Australia's LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9. You can listen live every Tuesday night from 7pm Eastern Australian Time on 94.9 FM in Melbourne and online at joy.org.au. You'll find all our podcasts at joy.org.au/worldwidewave or follow us on Facebook for the latest international LGBT news. Search W3 Joy on Facebook now.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.